Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, your backstage pass to revealing conversations with stars, creators, and industry leaders on Broadway, off-Broadway, and beyond. I'm Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Rachel Bloom. I first talked to Rachel way back in 2017 when she was in the third season of the musical TV series she created and starred in, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Broadway fans saw her again the following spring when she hosted the backstage segments at the Tony Awards. A lot has changed since then, and that's exactly what Bloom's new stage project is about. It's called Death, Let Me Do My Show, and it blends elements of stand-up, storytelling, and musical theater to talk candidly and comically about wrestling with the specter of death. It's centered on two things that happened to her early in the pandemic. First, in late March 2020, she had a baby. And then, soon thereafter, she lost her close friend and collaborator, Adam Schlesinger, to COVID. Death, Let Me Do My Show is now playing off-Broadway. And before we get to the interview, I just want to note that Bloom and Schlesinger were working on a musical adaptation of The Nanny when Schlesinger died. But alas, we aren't able to talk about that in our conversation because The Nanny is a TV show and is therefore encompassed by the ongoing WGA and SAG-AFTRA strike. But there's plenty of other things to talk about in our interview, from sharing the secret to good musical comedy, to dealing with hecklers, to her favorite jokes that she had to cut from the show. Hi, Rachel. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So your new show it's got elements of stand-up, but it's also deeply influenced by theater and musical theater in terms of, you know, like its form and the people you collaborate and even its subject to an extent. So how do you describe Death, Let Me Do My Show to people? What category does it fall in?
I say it's a stand-up show meets a one-act musical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of like, I mean, I say it's a stand-up show meets a one-act play meets a musical, but there are one-act musicals. So pick your poison.
Yeah. Okay. And was that the form that you were intending for the show from the beginning, even though the story you told seems to have morphed, but was that always kind of the form you were thinking about?
Well, from the beginning, do you mean like when I first started writing a show? In
yeah, like when you were like, because you oh, asked, we no. should tell listeners. Okay, yeah, we should tell listeners that you're fairly upfront in the show about, you know, you started working on the show back in 2019. And when you returned to it, you know, post-lockdown, you really wanted to continue writing that show. And then you found yourself unable to for a number of reasons. So first of all, yeah, tell us a little bit about that first impulse back then, what you wanted to do.
Well, my first impulse back then was I'd been touring a lot and I'd mm-hmm. been interspersing songs that people knew with new songs and mm-hmm. then coming up with new stand-up that could almost go with songs of mine that people knew. So I was mm-hmm. always working in stand-up and new songs into these concerts I was doing. And I did a residency at Just for Laughs for 5 days where I tried out some new material. And the idea was in 2020, after I gave birth, I would film a comedy special of what I do, which is stand-up and comedy songs. And so it was just very fun and very silly and like balls out. And then 2020 happened and I had all of the kind of bullet points of that show listed out on a whiteboard in my office, which had now become my daughter's playroom as well.
Right.
Yeah. And I remember looking at the whiteboard. There's nothing that makes things seem dumber than seeing stand-up bits or comedy songs, you know, bullet pointed out because, you know, it's just like pregnancy test, my butthole's like the hurricane. Like, it's just like little right. things out of that only you understand. And I was like, this is so stupid. Mm. I don't think there's room for this in the world anymore. Mm. I can't just pretend that the world is back to normal. And that's what inspired the show.
Right, right. So that show could... You could have just done that show. That show existed, basically, right? You could have.
Yes, and yeah. In fact, a big kind of real life arc I went through was this show originally had. So basically, without spoiling anything, I start the show and I say I'm going to do the show in 2019. Something happens that prevents me from continuing, and I have to talk about 2020. So the 2019 material quickly fades out. Right. In versions of the show that I've been trying to do in the past couple of years, I included a lot more of my old material and my character playing myself being unwilling to let go of that old material and clinging to it more. And then when I rewatched the shows, it just started to all lift out. So there's about an hour of cut material.
Yeah. Yeah. And you tell us about the development process. Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about kind of how you worked. You said you've been working on it for a couple of years.
So I had my stand-up. The first time I ever did this was at Dynasty Typewriter, a theater in Los Angeles. It was in late 2021. And I just stood on stage with 40 pages of just new stuff. And I just, like on a music stand, and I just kind of almost, not read it, but I was very on book, just and it was a mix of stand up and new songs and stories. And then a couple months after that, I added in this more global structure that is kind of the structure of the show. But the show kept changing, and I was from a very early time working with Seth Barish, who's my director, on honing the show, and really, how do you meld the stand up into the one act play of it all, and him, for instance, asking me to do a free write on my anger.
Okay. Was that useful?
Yeah. Some of it's in the show.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And how did you, you mentioned Seth Barish, and he is kind of the go-to guy for shows like yours, like these sort of storytelling kind of stand up, also theatrical, like often solo shows. How do you work with a director? Because this material is so for and about you. What does the outside perspective, how is that useful for you as a creator?
Well, he's really looking at story and arc first. So what helped is that he wasn't precious about, the stand-up bit lifts out, unfortunately. So he had very much, he came from a story place, as opposed to, I think, that a director who came from more of a stand-up or comedy place might have been, we can't lose this joke. But his unpreciousness with jokes has served the story of the show and served the structure of the show. And there are so many cut jokes.
Yeah.
There are still a lot of jokes, but there are a lot of jokes funny. I had to let go.
And tell me about the process of writing the songs for this. How does that, is it like writing the book of a musical? You were working on a musical. Is it like writing the book of a musical and you think, I need a song here? Or tell me about how you know a moment needs music.
Well, I think, especially in this show, for most of the songs, it's when does a stand-up bit or a story become better if it's in song? Because the first couple songs in this are very much stand-up bits expanded into songs with a genre that heightens the joke in a way you couldn't if it were just a stand-up bit.
Right.
So there were definitely songs added where it felt like there was a gap in storytelling, where it was like, it's been a while without a song. And then the last song is very much in the story. So that more was like writing a book musical where, what's the conclusion the characters are coming to?
Right. That is the song you wrote with Shayna Tao. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. That is a name that listeners of this podcast will know. How do you know her? Did you go to school with her or?
Why, we went to school together.
Yeah. That would have been my guess. Yes.
So she's wonderful. We worked together a little bit before. This was It was amazing because I came to her with a set of lyrics and I said, you know, this song is in a pastiche. I want to explore this idea. But unlike the songs, most of the songs in the show, which are kind of pastiches of genres, I don't know what genre this is. I just know the feeling that I won. So we really crafted it together.
Mm. Yeah. I was going to ask, because you work with a number of collaborators on the songs throughout the show, and how does that, I wondered if, like, do you break it down with, like, you write the lyrics and they write the music, or do you both collaborate? Like, do you also contribute to the music? Like, how does that work?
No, it just depends. So, for one of the songs I wrote with Eli Bolin, I said, here are some lyrics I have. I'm kind of leaving the music to you on this one. And then another song I went, here are chords. Here's a demo of this song. This song is more fully written, open to any and all changes and thoughts. So it just depends on the song.
Yeah. There is a version of this story that could be, oh, I thought I was going to do a show, and then I just decided not to do a show. You know, what did you feel like you needed to do with this, particularly with this show, and how has it served you as you've been working on it?
I think the show is not only me processing how I personally feel about death. Working through this show, and the conclusion I come to in the show is an actual conclusion I came to in my life. I came to that conclusion first and then worked it into the show. So it helps me process. It helps kind of scab over some things, because one of the things I like about sharing personal things with an audience is you almost give an experience over to an audience. It's not just yours anymore, if that makes sense. And I find that very healing. And then I like creating. So it was just a thing to contribute to the joy of creating and a little having my cake and eating it too, and being able to do stand up still, but it morphing into something more.
Right. Yeah. How much harder is it to be funny in a song versus in, you know, a story or in stand up?
It's harder in that you also have to, where does the song come in? Is this a line that has to rhyme? but in some ways a song structure gives, it's nice because you're like, okay, I'm in the chorus now. I need a line here for the chorus. Okay. I'm in the verse. I'm in the bridge. There's a nice structure to songwriting that I like working within, but the parameters are definitely incredibly tricky, because especially when you're rhyming, and it's why I actually kind of, especially in verses I wrote, avoided rhyming. And Adam, working with Adam Schlesinger, he was much more, let's try to make it rhyme. Let's try to make it rhyme. And he really, it's harder, but because part of making people laugh in general is surprise.
Right.
And when you're in a song and you know what's coming because you've heard this chorus before,
right,
how does the song not just become repetitive? And that is harder to do than what if you're just doing a stand-up bit, because you're not following any sort of structure.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like there's probably something about, because audiences can anticipate a rhyme, right? Like that can also like lead to a lessening of the surprise for a punchline, right? If they can see the rhyme, then they can see the punchline, right?
So you have to find different ways. So like, okay, there's a song about the Rainbow Bridge in the show, which is, you know, this idea, it's a theory about pet death. I know something's going to end with like, something has to rhyme with bridge. So it's the name Midge, which is not a joke, right? Something, I am Midge.
Right.
But the next line is a joke.
Right.
I got answers at the base of the Rainbow Bridge, which makes sense in the context of the song. And so it's also finding, right, if I'm going to rhyme here and that's not going to be the joke, where maybe before the rhyme, there's something after it is harder.
Yeah. 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 Do you have kind of a secret? Like, is there a secret that you can identify to good musical comedy, to like when a song works or when it doesn't work?
I think just surprise.
Yeah, that's it.
Like just stuff you don't, just getting really specific and really continuing to surprise the audience. which is harder to do in songs.
I'll have more with Rachel right after the break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
And now, here's more with Rachel Bloom, the creator and star of Death, Let Me Do My Show.
As we've alluded to, you talk a lot in the show about Adam Schlesinger and his death during early on in COVID. And he was your frequent collaborator. You worked with him on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and he also wrote musicals like, you know, he wrote Crybaby and The Bedwetter, and, you know, he's a musical guy. He was also in the band Fountains of Wayne. What can you tell us about, and you were in the middle of working on a Broadway musical with him. Can you tell us a little bit about kind of what that collaboration was? Like, why were you a good fit creatively?
When I started writing with him,
yes,
he was introduced in the fold because he had been roommates with Aline Brosh McKenna's husband, Aline Brosh McKenna, with whom I created Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Mm-hmm. They'd been roommates in the early 90s. Mm. And Aline said, you should meet Adam. And I'd always worked with my other writing partner, Jack Dolgen. He had written and co-written and produced most of my music videos. So we started working with Adam, and it was a fit.
Sorry, he did one of the songs in the show. Yeah, at least one. Is that right? In your show now.
Yes. He co-wrote the lyrics of one of the songs.
Got it.
In a way, this show was basically what I found in Adam was just a collaborator on all fronts, including musical theater. It's very rare to find someone who has such a command of pop and rock, but also major command of writing musical theater.
Yeah.
So that's one of the many reasons we were a fit. And part of me writing every song in the show pretty much is written with a different collaborator or different collaborator setup, because it's kind of me experimenting with, okay, what is my songwriting life look like now that Adam's gone?
Yeah.
Because before he was gone, I just would have got, I just went to him with everything.
Right. Yeah. And what have you learned during that process about what your songwriting life looks like?
I think different people bring different things, but there are so many talented people out there. Mm. There's no one who's ever going to be, you know, a one-stop shop, for lack of a better way of saying it, than Adam. Adam could just, he just could do everything. He knew every genre. He just could do everything. And also he's in my ear he was very not precious and very not sentimental and not saccharine. So I think he also, I've tried to write a show that he would like.
You are someone who works across genres and in various media. And I just wondered if there were artists whose work and trajectory you consider sort of influential for you. Like, you've thought, oh, they're influences, or I'm interested in modeling my career to some extent after what they do.
Oh, Mel Brooks.
Oh, yeah.
Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to think of people basically who do all things and including music.
Yeah.
Especially comedy music. Those are two of the main, you know, main influences and career models that come to mind.
Yeah.
I mean, I was first inspired to write comedy music. Someone showed me the comedian Julie Brown, her music videos of 'Cause I'm a Blonde. Mm-hmm. And the Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun, which are these music videos from the late 80s, I think. And it hadn't occurred to me, I'd only seen men doing comedy music and comedy parodies. And it hadn't occurred to me, oh, no, women can do it too, and we can parody our own sexuality in that way. Mm. And we can make fun of the way that music and pop culture sexualize women, and we can turn that on its head.
Yeah, yeah. Do you find in the broader entertainment industry that there is an interest in musical storytelling, or is it a thing, a hump you have to get over, or is it... Tell me what the... Because there's the perennial, you know, impression that musical theater is terminally uncool. And I just wonder if that is a thing you encounter when you're going into pitch meetings.
Yeah. Look, the sell of a musical show is always going to be harder.
Yeah.
But it depends. People say... Yeah. What I find interesting is sometimes people say, we want to do a musical. And then you go, okay, so you want... books to go into song. You want people to burst into song. They go, oh no. What we just want is like cool music. And you're like, well, oh, you're just talking about, you just want a good soundtrack.
Right.
So I think a lot of people in film and TV don't understand what musicals are. And then you'll see, I don't know, a screenplay or a TV script that's written to be a musical, but the person writing it isn't a musical writer. And so they'll write dialogue, write a scene, and then it'll be like, insert song here, something about this, but it doesn't work. And you're like, well, no, this isn't the right placement for a song. And so I think there's this idea of, I don't know, yeah, make it a musical. You put a fucking song here. And I think there's a lack of appreciation. I think that when you make a musical film or TV show, especially now, you're going to have a narrower audience because people aren't used to seeing musicals. It's not like we're in the, you know, the 40s, 50s, 60s anymore, where musical films were ubiquitous. And I think this is a separate issue, but I think that songwriters in general are undervalued. Songwriters in film and TV don't have a union, and it's how you can get into these things called demo derbies, which is where you are asked for no money to write a full song, a fully produced song. You are going to go into a studio, you're going to pay musicians, and you are going to get nothing. And that's the norm. And sometimes those are amazing. That's how Adam got That Thing You Do. It was just from, he was one of, you know, 100 people to submit a song, but there's a lack of appreciation, I think, for what goes into songwriting, and people just go, oh yeah, just writing out, write, just write a little singy songy beep 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 bop.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you think about you know, the show is live and on stage, and you have worked on, presumably are working on other musical theater projects. How do you think about stage and theater fitting into your broader career? Will it always be a part of what you do, do you think? Like, tell me about how you think of balancing that and like your screen work.
Oh, absolutely. It'll always fit. I have this mindset, you go where the gigs are. Stage is my first love. It's where I come from. So it's always going to be something that I'll be excited to do, that I'll be thinking about you know, how to work it into my life. I have another idea for a musical that I've started working on. So it depends on the idea. Honestly, like I'm an idea first person, and then, okay, what's the right medium for this idea? I'm not opposed to someday writing a graphic novel. Sure. If it's the best, you know, way to communicate a certain story or idea.
Yeah. What makes an idea right for the musical theater, do you think?
I don't know. I think a lot of ideas are right for musical theater. And I think a big misconception, and this is more on the musical film side, is people think if something's going to be a musical in film and TV, there has to be, it has to be about, you know, a choir or something where music is inherent, but anything can be a musical. So what's freeing about stage is you don't have to have the excuse or reason of people bursting into song, but with TV and film, you almost need that more.
Yeah.
And it's not good or bad. It's just different. So I don't know. It really depends on the idea.
Yeah.
And it also depends on, you know, frankly, the market, what's getting made. And if you have an expensive, I'm working on something right now that would be an expensive period piece. Yeah. I think that's more conducive to stage, frankly.
Right. Yeah. Can you tell us about anything, any of the other things that you're working on for stage?
I don't, I'm potentially working on it with another place, so I don't want to spoil it, but it's a story that I've wanted to work on for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And that's boring. I know that's a boring answer.
No, that's okay. That's, but you are working on something.
Yes, one of several things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So what's next for, Death Let Me Do My Show?
I don't know. Mm. You're talking to me in the middle of, you know, opening night is day after tomorrow.
Yeah.
Let's see how this run goes. I obviously want to do it again. There are so many ways to go with this. Mm-hmm. Of course, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking of like, okay, how would you eventually film this?
Yeah.
Would love to explore Broadway in the West End. Mm-hmm. That's a matter of, you know, who can make that happen, seeing the show and coming to me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And what are you learning? What do you learn from an audience about this show as it's been developing? Like, how does that inform you show to show, and then also how the show grows over its development?
Oh, I mean, first of all, with jokes, audience is everything, right? So if there's a joke that I'm telling that's consistently not getting laughs, I got to cut that joke. But also, audiences really vary. It's unbelievable how much something that gets a huge laugh one night doesn't get a laugh another night.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you just need, their audiences have tastemakers in them. Mm. And if you have one or two laughers who decide to laugh at a thing, but also maybe it's the way I'm doing it, because I kind of change up the way that I do the show every night. I mean, you saw the show, it's loose. Yeah. I am always kind of putting things into my own words. Mm. So there's an unpredictability to that. And New York audience, I would say theater audiences more than comedy theater audiences, because I've done this in both. The theater audiences are thirsting for plot and they're looking for it. And the stand-up audiences, it comes out of nowhere and they don't even know what to make of it.
Yeah. The plot? Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
That's they think they're seeing a comedy show.
Yeah, yeah. Is that mostly, do you find that's determined by venue often? Like what people expect from you and from your show?
Yes. Yeah. I think so. I was in Boulder and it was a very big venue, very big comedy venue there, the Boulder Theater, and everyone there is lovely. But I had a heckler one night and he went, I just thought there'd be jokes in this show because the show gets quite serious. Mm-hmm. And he went, tell a joke. And it was really intense.
Yeah. And how'd you deal with him?
The audience, the show gets kind of meta. The audience thought it was maybe built in. Mm-hmm. And I had to stop and explain, this is not built in. This is actually just a person being an asshole. And I said, get the fuck out. You're ruining the show. Please get the fuck out right now.
Yeah.
And they got the fuck out.
Good for them, I guess. Good on them. And good on you. Give us a couple of your favorite cut jokes from this show.
Well, this was a hard one to lose. So the first time my husband and I had sex after I gave birth, it's funny, I'm doing this podcast in my in-laws' house in Long Island right now. But I've told this regularly on stage. The first time my husband and I had sex after I gave birth, I said, like, we did it at the 6-week mark when it's safe. Mm. And I said, how was it down there? And he said, you know, when you're walking around a house after there's been an earthquake, and the furniture's moved around, the photos are askew, you can tell something bad has happened here, but it's essentially the same house. I missed that joke.
Yeah, yeah. It got a big laugh, I bet.
Huge laugh!
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Did you write any songs that got cut?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about them.
Well, there were a couple songs that were in the previous version of the show.
Oh, right. Of course.
I wanted to hang on to. So there was one about realistic pop star. There was another song. I'll release them someday about what if Billie Eilish were really, really old, where it's just basically a Billie Eilish style song, but like sung in a nursing home.
Right. Okay.
Where it's like, why is pop music owned by the super young people haven't experienced the world. So it was like old Billie Eilish. I used to talk about, I mean, there's a whole detour in the show about my experiences with death up until 2020, which is more of my fascination with the macabre and how I was raised to be fascinated with the macabre. And I basically voluntarily, I went to visit Auschwitz like alone, which was, everyone was like, why would you do that? But I was raised, especially by my father, to really appreciate history and appreciate the darkest parts of history. And so there was a song about that.
And it's gone. But will be released at some time, you think?
At some point.
Yeah. Could you imagine working it into another show at some point? Like, is that even?
Yeah. I think there's a whole other thing to be mined with the idea of, light and dark, and my fascination with the macabre and how that's actually changed since I had a kid. Mm-hmm. There's a sensitivity to dark things that I didn't have before I had a kid.
Yeah. Well, we will look forward to hearing that song and many others and all the jokes that we miss whenever you release them. And in the meantime, you're in Death Let Me Do My Show. Thanks very much for chatting with me, and enjoy the rest of the run.
Thank you so much.
That was Rachel Bloom, now starring off-Broadway in Death Let Me Do My Show. If you enjoyed this conversation here on Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. It really does help. Or tell a friend about Stagecraft. Find past episodes and subscribe at all the places you get your pods, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on the Broadway Podcast Network, a great place to find more theater for your ears. Until next episode, find me on Instagram and Twitter at Gordon B. Cox. Thanks for listening, and see you at the theater.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.